From TexasObserver.org, you're listening to the Texas Observer Podcast. I'm Jonathan McNamara. Well, we've been covering it for months, but the 83rd Texas legislative session has come to an end, sort of. Governor Rick Perry has called a special session to deal with some unresolved business, including redistricting maps initially, and after a call to add them to the special, abortion and legislation that would establish a sentence of life with parole for 17-year-olds who commit capital felonies. But a budget has been agreed upon. Changes have been made to Texas. Legislators have been thanked for their leadership, and all of this has us wondering, is Texas better off now than it was 2 years ago? To find out, I talked with Observer staff writer Patrick Michaels and one of our legislative interns, Olivia Messer, about key issues like women's health and education. But for starters, here's what Observer editor Dave Mann had to say when I asked him straight up, is Texas better off now than it was at the end of the 82nd session?
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt. We're in a better place than we were at the end of 2011. I mean, 2011 was the toughest session that I think a lot of people maybe had ever seen. So it's better than 2011. But that's a pretty low bar.
So just how low is that bar? Here's a quick refresher on what went down in 2011.
Well, at the end of 2011, we had a $27 million deficit. And the reaction to that was to basically close the budget gap through cutting spending. And we already didn't spend very much money to begin with, so the reductions were deep and pretty painful. Like, they cut $5.4 billion out of education. They cut two-thirds of the budget for family planning services and birth control, women's health. And pretty much all across the board, any agency or program you can think of in Texas was cut.
During our talk, Dave kept referring to the 2011 session as being far more divisive. So I asked, just what was so divisive about the previous session?
Just about everything that went through. I mean, the budget, the education cuts, the family planning cuts, they passed the sonogram law that required sonograms before abortions. They passed voter ID legislation that, you know, the Democrats are basically saying was racist. So, you know, you basically had, between the family planning cuts and the sonogram law, a bill, you know, legislation that Democrats were saying was anti-women, and the voter ID law, you had legislation that the Democrats were saying was racist. And on the education cuts and a lot of the budget cuts, I mean, you had the Democrats saying that Republicans were balancing the budget on the backs of poor people. Obviously, the Republicans disagreed with all those things. But when you're talking about divisive issues, like, there you had the opposition party basically calling the Republican leadership anyway, you know, anti-woman, racist, and attacking poor people. So we didn't see that kind of stuff this session.
Instead, Dave said, legislators on both sides of the aisle were willing to compromise. Dave, for months, has been referring to this session as the Kumbaya session.
An example of that is, like, the bill to require people applying for unemployment benefits to get drug screening.
Right.
And this was something that was pitched before the session. It was very controversial and very divisive. And it was a bill to say, okay, if you're applying for unemployment benefits from the state, you're going to have to, some of you will have to go through drug testing. That bill was really dialed back, and a similar bill to require testing for welfare applicants. The authors were willing to kind of compromise on some stuff, soften the language, soften the penalties, and now those are bills, one of them ended up passing. Those are bills that I'm not going to say everybody agreed with, but they were softened and dialed down to the point where they weren't nearly as divisive. And that was kind of the theme of the session. They came in, passed the budget. We didn't see a lot of socially conservative legislation passing. There just weren't those divisive floor fights and divisive issues really breaking into the open. Now, having said all that, the caveat is that we're now in a special session and some of those things could come back.
And what's likely to come back?
Well, the main thing we've heard about so far is abortion bills.
So last session had two main women's health events that people are still talking about.
Observer legislative intern Olivia Messer.
The passing of the sonogram law that requires women to receive a sonogram 24 hours before receiving an abortion, and the budget cuts that slashed 2/3 of the budget for family planning budget from $111 million to $38 million. And this forced, over the interim and the beginning of this session, more than 60 Texas family planning clinics to close their doors.
Okay, well, what about this session?
There's been a lot of talk about this session restoring last session's cuts to family planning. A lot of people think that happened. That actually didn't happen. Technically, what happened is that the ledge added $100 million to Texas's primary care program for women's health. This includes family planning, but this new funding goes to things like public hospitals, public clinics, and what are called federally qualified health centers. So none of these go to any of the places that were previously leading family care clinics in the past. This session, they did allocate $70 million to the Texas Women's Health Program, but this program just replaced the Medicaid Women's Health Program. So the federal government basically offered to fund 90% of our Medicaid Women's Health Program, and everyone in the state said, basically, we don't want your $63 million. We'll fund it ourselves with $70 million if we can exclude Planned Parenthood. So, yeah, so they closed the Medicaid Women's Health Program and replaced it with one that we funded just so that 51 Planned Parenthood clinics couldn't get any state resources.
So where are we now on these issues, better or worse?
That's a tough question because there is funding now, but it doesn't actually look like we are in a better spot. I mean, at the end of last session, none of their changes, like the sonogram law, had taken place yet. But now that they have, Texas is in a really bad place in terms of women's health funding, and they are able to kind of escape that, the legislators are, by making it look like they're putting all this money back in. We're really kind of in the same place that we were last session. It's not really clear whether or not any of this stuff will appear in a special session. Governor Perry could easily add it to the call, and then any of these 24 bills that didn't make it to the floor could come up in the next, you know, few weeks.
In fact, that's precisely what happened. After this interview with Olivia, Governor Rick Perry did add abortion to the special session call. Here's what Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst had to say about it. Texas, he said, is already one of America's strongest pro-life states, but we can do more to protect the pre-born. Until Americans are willing to overturn Roe v. Wade, Texas should at least outlaw abortion after 20 weeks of pregnancy, regulate abortion clinics to the safety standards governing ambulatory and outpatient surgical centers, and ensure that abortion clinics have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles. In the interest of saving innumerable lives, I will not leave any option off the table to achieve the will of the people during this special session. So, abortion issues are, not so surprisingly, still very much up in the air. But what about education?
So heading into the session, there were the three major issues that people were looking at. There was school finance, charter schools, and vouchers, school choice together, and then testing and accountability.
Observer staff writer Patrick Michaels.
As far as charters, there was a cap on the number of charter schools. 215 charters could be issued by the state, and there were no private school vouchers, but there was a big push from the Lieutenant Governor and from Senator Dan Patrick, the new chair of the Education Committee, to make those happen. And it seemed like there was a lot of momentum behind school vouchers for the first time in a while. There was a lot of testing going on in schools, 15 tests under the new STAR test plan that you'd be required to pass in order to graduate from high school. So there was a big movement among, you know, most recently, like wealthy suburban parents to cut down on testing as well. And a lot of momentum, you know, in the Capitol, people kind of having the idea that this is going to be one of the major changes, there'll be less testing. And then on school finance, as the session was starting, the school finance trial was still underway.
So just how much money was cut from school budgets in the 2011 legislative session?
$5.4 billion is, you know, all of the education money together that was cut in the 2011 session. So less money, and then higher standards being set for schools because of the STAR tests were even tougher than the tests that came before that. So the argument in court was that they had been asked to do more and given less money to do it. And those were the arguments in the school finance trial that was going on as lawmakers came to Austin. And the idea was that they probably wouldn't mess around with the way that the funding was allocated too much. But there would be a big push to get more money back in after so many cuts were made 2 years ago.
All right, so what about this session? Where are we on testing?
So as far as testing goes now, we're down from 15 tests you have to pass in high school to 5. And there are a lot of other sort of small changes that went along with that. You have a couple less tests in elementary school. And one of the big changes that happened kind of quietly, but there's a limit on how many benchmark tests school districts can give. These are their own tests they give to get kids ready for the real test from the state, which is one of the things that was driving the number of testing days up so high.
Sure.
School districts is doing their own testing because the stakes were so high. Now there's a state limit on how many benchmark tests you can give as well, which there wasn't before. So in a lot of ways, there's been a lot less, probably a lot less testing coming out in the future. There are new graduation plans as well, which was not as big a part of the testing conversation at the start of the session, but as it moved forward, that became even a more controversial issue. Was what are we going to require kids to complete on their way to high school, and what are we going to deem college ready? What class requirements are they going to be for the top 10% rule, or for getting financial aid from the state? And all those questions were ones that were answered too.
I asked Patrick if these new graduation plans lead to more vocational education paths.
That's it. So what happened was that there was all this momentum for cutting down on testing.
Right.
And that was agreement across the board pretty much right away. In large part probably because the one person in the Senate who'd been holding a line on all the testing that had been created before was Florence Shapiro, and she wasn't there anymore.
Right.
All these new faces came in. They were hearing from all their constituents that they wanted to get rid of the testing. So they come in and basically say, well, we don't know what happened in 2009 when we built this thing, but obviously we were mistaken. And well, they would stop short of saying they were mistaken, but they were saying, well, I don't know what happened, but anyway, let's fix it.
Yeah.
So that all happened really easily. And what the second piece of that, which got built into the testing reform bill, was adding more career and technical education as well, instead of the strictly college-ready program that had been put in before. And so there was a lot of business and industry coming in to testify that they needed more skills, from high school graduates who were going to go straight into the workforce and maybe not go to college first. That became kind of the bigger fight, are we going to steer some kids into career pathways instead of college, or how do we give kids more technical skills without suggesting too strongly that they do that instead of going to college?
Especially when it seems like the message for so long has been your goal should be to go to college.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So the idea is that they're both fine options, but if you have it in you and you're interested, then by all means, reach for the college-ready stuff.
Right, I can see why that would be controversial.
Yeah. So that's the testing and accountability piece.
Okay.
On the charter school piece, we got, and the school choice piece in general, there was some movement to open things up to a little bit more, but really a lot less than I think, it seemed like we'd get at the start of the session. We got a higher cap on charter schools, which by the year 2019 is going to be up to 305 from 215, and it's going to go up 10 or 15 a year till then. But no private school vouchers, and the House even had sort of a big dramatic vote on this just to say that they don't want to have any money for vouchers in the budget. So this is one area where Dan Patrick, in his first year as education chair, showed a lot of compromise that he hadn't really had to before, in any of his time in the Senate. And the last piece then is school finance, which ended up being, the whole time it was a big issue for the Democrats getting more money for schools, and they did pretty well with that, and they got almost $5 billion back, I think, in the end, depending on how you look at the budget, maybe even more than that. not quite up to the $5.4 billion that was cut 2 years ago.
Right.
And you have more kids now than you did 2 years ago, too.
Right.
And of course, there's always inflation to consider.
You put in a certain amount of money, and you can say you're replacing X number of dollars, but the dollars are worth less the longer you go, and they don't go as far when you have more students 2 years later. I think it's 80,000 students a year that we add. So it's more money than they have now, but right. It's less money than they had 4 years ago.
So you can certainly see where that wouldn't be adequate, right?
Once again, Observer editor Dave Mann.
2010 spending levels for 2013 Texas after 3 years of population growth isn't going to provide the same services. You're not going to get the same bang for your buck that you did 3 years ago.
So like the spending per student is actually like less than it was?
Well, that gets complicated. It depends how you look at it. Okay. In some districts, I think it probably will be less than it has been. In some districts, it won't. I mean, the funding formulas for education are complicated, and I'm not the world's expert on funding formulas for education. But I think when you take, if you look at it, you know, from the 30,000 foot view, in education and in all these other programs where they restored funding to 2010 levels, you're still not getting back to where you were. It's that, you know, the analogy is like if you dig a big hole and then you only fill the hole 3/4 of the way up, yeah, you added a lot in, but you're still in a hole. And that's kind of where we are now. Like they, if you look at just the bottom line of the budget, yeah, they added a lot of money back in and we increased spending, and that is all great. And millions of people will benefit from these additional services and additional resources. So from that basic point of view, the budget looks pretty good. But if you take the wider view and you look at it in context, we're still in a hole. And the budget still really doesn't address the needs of the state. So there's some wider, and we still got some kind of larger fiscal problems about the amount of money we bring into Texas, the amount of money we spend, that have kind of gone unaddressed, and will have to be addressed at some point. So on a bit bottom line, yeah, it's a much better budget than we've seen, but the big picture is we're still kind of underfunding the needs of Texas.
At the end of our interview, I asked Dave what history will remember about the 2013 legislative session. Here's what he had to say.
There's all these headlines of the session, and in the days after the session, it's hard to kind of sort through what is the biggest thing. But for me, I think in the years to come, what I will remember, what I will think about, and I think what a lot of people will look back and say, yeah, this was the headline, Medicaid expansion, or lack thereof. Okay, we had a chance under Obamacare to get this great deal where the federal government would pay for Texas to insure 1.5 million people who don't have health insurance. And they pay for the entire thing for several years. And then after that, it would be a 9-to-1 match. So the federal government would pay for 90% of it. So we're going to get a lot of benefit for Texans in putting up very little money. $100 billion over 9 years, I think, is the estimate of what we get.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. And you think about how much money hospitals spend on charity care for the uninsured. The bang for the economic bang for your buck, when you're getting $100 million, basically a stimulus coming into the state. I mean, there's a real economic issue here. Okay, this is going to help our economy. It's going to make people healthier. It's going to make people healthier, work more productive workers. And on a base level, it saves lives. I mean, people don't like to talk about that, but if you're uninsured, yeah, you can go to the emergency room if you have an emergency. But if you get a chronic disease, you get cancer, and you don't have health insurance, you either have to get charity somewhere, or if you don't, you're going to die. And there are people that don't get services, and they die. So the Texas legislature refused to accept Medicaid expansion. And I think a lot of people are surprised that the leadership of the state is willing to turn away $100 billion in federal money. Okay, it's not like we're getting that money back. Okay, we paid the taxes. It's going to get spent somewhere, and we're saying no thanks, and it's going to get spent in other states.
What's the reason? What's the rationale for turning it away?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think a lot of it is political. I think Rick Perry, to me, gets the large majority of the blame. He set the tone from the beginning, saying we were not going to take Medicaid expansion. We didn't want it. And made very strong statements throughout the session against Medicaid expansion and just left no wiggle room. Even when other conservative states like Florida and Arizona and Arkansas were cutting deals with the federal government to take Medicaid expansion, Texas was still an unambiguous no.
For more on these topics and the special session, keep reading the Texas Observer and texasobserver.org as our reporting continues. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next Observer podcast.